Okay, Parsha Bullock is a very exciting Parsha. Among the more exciting things that we're going to skip is the talking donkey, the whole Mr. Ed, the whole Mr. Ed thing. We're not going to do that. And we're going to go straight to the end and look at the last episode. And within the last episode, there's really two words that we're going to focus on. Or really one word, but the word is translated differently by different people, and it's applied to who was the subject is different from different people. But let's start looking in source number one, which is chapter 25, Perek Kaf Hei. We'll start from Pasuk Aleph. Vayeshev Yisrael Bishitim, and Israel settled in a place called Shittim. Vayachel ha'am, and the people began. We always have to be careful when it says ha'am, who the am is. Is the am the regular people? Is the am the Erev Rav? Because we just keep finding different terms are used. You have am, you have Eidah, you have Bnei Yisrael, and so on and so forth. So over here it says Vayachel ha'am, which generally has a lower common denominator to it. V'yachel ha'am liznot el benot Moav. And the people began, so right now for the lack of a better word, I'm going to translate liznot as liznot, without any translation. I'll translate. Liznot will more often than not have the connotation of something which is sordid and something which is sexual. I'm just not sure about the word El, if the word El should be used over here. It should have been, then, it should have said Liznot im benot Moav. Va'acharei. So over here, Liznot el benot Moav is a little awkward. They began to engage in illicit sexual activity El benot Moav, so that's a little strange. Now, of course, the fact that we find Moav over here is interesting, because when we go back to the part of the Parsha that we skipped, there we found a very strange confederacy, one between Moav and Midian, which Rashi tells us are two peoples that generally did not get along with one another. I've pointed out previously that both Moav and Midian are connected to Avraham Avinu, Moav coming from Lot and Midian coming from one of Avraham's concubines. So over here, they are both rejected, as it were, members of Avraham's family, and that may help explain why specifically they moved to an Avraham wannabe like Bilam to try to find some kind of a spiritual way of attacking the people. At the end of the day, the various attempts to curse, to attack, to use Ayin Hara, as the Gemara understands, that doesn't work. And at the end, what we find is something which is far more practical, old-fashioned, and effective. And that is, instead, the Benot Moav come down and they accomplish something which all the curses of Bilam were not able to accomplish, and that leads us into the next pasuk. Vatikrena la'am lezivchei Elohein, and they called to the people. So again, it's la'am, it's this lowest common denominator, and he called them out, and they called out to them lezivchei Elohein, in order to serve their gods. V'yachal ha'am v'yishtachavu l'Elohim, the people began to eat, and they bow down to these gods. Now, I really do have to ask, if these are two different things, is liznot really something which is sexual, or is liznot, is the word liznot can also have this connotation of being involved in corruption, being involved in something which is corrupt behavior. So is it that the people began to do corrupt behavior by the Bnot Moav? Now, why would I read a sexual understanding into this? Well, one is the word. Well, one is to keep you awake. But secondly, is the benot. It's the fact that the benot, that the girls are involved in it. But the fact that the girls are involved in it could mean that there's a sexual allure. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's a sexual act. It could be that there is some kind of perhaps even sexual promise. But again, what bothers me is liznot el benot Moav rather than im or acharei. Vayitzamed Yisrael bal pa'or. And Israel, and by the way, notice the difference between Am versus Yisrael now. Vayitzmad Yisrael lebal pa'or. So now that we see inroads have been made, and now we find that the Jewish people, the Israelites, they now have become connected to this Baal Pa'or. The result is, Vayichar af Hashem b'Yisrael, and God gets angered at the people. Now the question is, the anger of God, how do we understand it? The simple reading of the text is potentially that the Torah using an anthropomorphism is telling us about an emotion that God has. Now the truth is that that is somewhat preposterous, because even when you want to use anthropomorphisms to talk about an emotion would seem to be a little bit strange or a little awkward. The Gemara understands as a general principle that whenever it speaks of God's anger, it speaks of a direct result of the anger, which means the anger is not telling you how God feels, as important it is to talk about how you feel, but rather it's articulating that something has happened as a result of that. That af means that a punishment or something has materialized. So let's keep that in mind, because as far as something, some manifestation of this anger, is it here or not? So that I want to at least have as an open question at this point. Vayomar Hashem el Moshe, God gives a direct order at this point. And by the way, the reason I'm reading this so carefully right now is because our minds play tricks on us, and people who just sort of remember what went on over here knows that there's some big outrage that took place, and no one knew what to do, and then Pinchas stands up and Pinchas takes action, which is all very nice, except when we read what happens. So, as I said, let's continue and read what happens and see exactly what is the role of Pinchas and what is the role of others who we sometimes accuse of inaction. Vayomar Hashem el Moshe, kach et kol rashei ha'am, gather the entire people together, vihoka otam lahash, excuse me? Sorry. Vayomar Hashem el Moshe, kach et kol roshei ha'am, bring the leaders of the people, vehoka otam lahashem neged hashamesh, vayashov charon af Hashem b'Yisrael. God instructs Moshe to gather leaders. The leaders are going to mete out punishment, and when this happens, then the anger will subsist. Now, by virtue of the fact of God saying, and then the anger will subsist, that we subside, we do have some kind of an indication that the anger is perhaps burning. Vayomer Moshe el Shiftei Yisrael. So now Moshe goes and implements what God just said to him. He says to the judges of Israel, Hirgu ish anashav hanitzmadim leval par. Go and kill your people who are clinging to the Baal Par. So what we have right over here is a problem, a divine response, divine instruction, and then Moshe going and assumingly that everything will now be implemented. What has disappeared along the way is this issue of the sexual sin versus the idolatry. Because again, if Pasuk Aleph talked about Vayechel Am Liznot et Benot Moav, it talks about a sexual sin, while the second and third verses speak about an idolatry, which then emerges from it. And again, I said I had this open question, what is the relationship between the two, and to what extent there was this original sexual sin over here. Nonetheless, it seems to have disappeared. Pasuk Vav. Bnei ish mi bnei Yisrael ba, a man from among bnei Yisrael emerges. Now, one of the interesting things about this entire section is that we're not told his identity. Later on, we will be told who he is, that he's not just anybody, he is a man of some importance. Bnei ish mi bnei Yisrael, and it could be that the word ish, would indicate importance. But v'nei ish mibnei Yisrael ba, v'yakrev el echav et hamidyanit le'enei Moshe le'enei kol adat b'nei Yisrael. The word used over here is v'yakrev. So what exactly does the word v'yakrev mean? We'll leave that also. It means to bring near, but we'll leave that as an open question for the moment. V'yakrev el echav et hamidyanit. He brings the Midianite. Now that's also very interesting because we did not have any Midianiot until this point in this section. What we had was Benot Moav. So why is there now a Midianite? And also it's HaMidianite makes it sound like somebody also who is of great significance. Also next week, Parsha will be revealed to us her identity, and even Chazal assumed that she's even more important than she may have been, or what's indicated on at least in the Pasha Pshat. Now, what does it mean by a crave, and who is this Midianite, and what does he do to Lene Moshe, Lene Kol Adat B'nai Israel? So here you have an example of a much broader Kol Adat B'nai Israel. He does something which sounds quite publicly. V'hema bochim petach ohamoed. And they were crying by the entrance to the ohamoed. So, assuming the word bochim means crying, which I have no reason to assume it means anything else, the only question is, who is crying, and why are they crying, and unless you want to also ask, what does crying mean? Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Pinchas sees this. Vayakam mitocha eda. He emerges from the community. Vayikach romach biado. And he takes a sword in his hand, or a spear. Vayavo achar ish Yisrael el akuba. Vayidkor et shnehem. And he goes out and he stabs them both. The Gemara describes how he killed them both with one shot. Et ish Yisrael ve'et ha'isha el kovata v'te'atzer ha'magefa me'al b'nei Yisrael. And that's when the magefa ended. That's when the plague ended. Which, of course, is a plague that we were not told about before, unless the plague is exactly what it said, that when God was angry, God being angry means plague. But now we're told the plague stops. But, of course, are they involved in a sexual relationship over here or not? The Chumash, I think, implies it, but doesn't necessarily say clearly. Over here, it is absolutely understood, which, of course, if any of you read Professor Asaf's blog yesterday, you'll know that means this section will not be included in the new Skvera Chumash, which they have published for the girls in Square to learn. They removed anything which is racy from it, and theologically problematic. They start in Lech Lecha. The Chumash starts. It starts in Lech Lecha. It's what? Yes. It skips chapter 38. For the girls who learn in Skver, they're whatever their equivalent to Beis Yaakov is.
New York, in
Square Town, a new Chumash, but they left out anything which is problematic. Okay. They took out as well. There's no reason that Yosef ends up in prison. There's no Eshet Potiphar. There's none of that.
No.
Yeah, all that's gone. All that's gone. So presumably, this section would be gone. Well, they would have to have dirty minds first of all to read it, and then to project upon it some kind of sexual behavior. But if they know the Gemara, so they definitely got rid of it. Yes. Correct. This is not new, but they have some Rashis. They don't have other Rashis. Already years ago, the school in the old city, the Zilberman School. So the one who started the family, the patriarch, Rabbi Zilberman, he put out a Rashi in English, and he did not include all the Rashis. Anything that he thought was not appropriate for school age children was not included in the English translation over there. So you have to be careful which books you read. So anyway, let's get back. See, I did get your attention. Let's get back to our plague. Vayihi ameitim b'magifa arba'im v'esrim aleph. And 24,000 was the number of people who died in this plague. So instead of following the simple order of our sources, let's go a little bit out of order. Start with number 10, and let's read what the Gemara does with it. Vayomer Moshe el Shiftei Yisrael. You know, Moshe goes as God commanded and goes to the leaders of the judges in Israel. Halach Shifto Shel Shimon Eitzel Zimri ben Salu. The judges of Shimon went to Zimri, who is identified as a leader within the Shevet, the tribe of Shimon. Amrullah, they said, Hein Danim Dinei Nefeshot. They are judging over here laws of life and death. Now, it's also interesting. Was there any indication that there was actually a judicial process taking place, or was there only punishment taking place? So, why would I think there was a judicial process? Because it used the word shoftei, because it used the word judges. But did it necessarily mean that the judges were going to sit down and write them in and look for two witnesses, cross-examine in the middle as this plague was taking place? What this really goes down to is what the word hukah means that we saw a little bit earlier.
Which word?
Hukah. Hukah was back in God's...
anger?
No. What God says in Pasuk Dalet, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, kach et kol roshei ha'am. By the way, he doesn't say shoftei, roshei ha'am, v'hokah otam, l'Hashem. So that's the question, what hokah means. So we're leaving hokah also as untranslated at this point. When God says to him, roshei ha'am, Vayomer Moshe el shoftei Yisrael, and Moshe is the one who then goes to shoftei Yisrael, which means, did God ask over here for a judicial process to take place? Or did God ask over here for perhaps a very different type of process? If you want an indication of the word hokah means, look, for example, at Rashi in source number 14. V'hokah, Rashi writes, hi tli'ah. String them up.
Okay.
One second, let me continue what Rashi says. Kimoshe matzinu b'bnei Sha'ol v'hoka anum l'Hashem v'sham tliya mifureshet ba'avodah zarah baskila v'kol haniskalin nitlin. The second part of Rashi is trying to bring it in line with Jewish law. So in Jewish law, for avodah zarah, a person would be stoned. But anybody who gets stoned, the Mishnah tells us, they would stone the person, which actually means pushing them off the second floor or the third floor of a building and then throwing some rocks on them. And then they string up the body for a short amount of time. So over here, Rashi understands v'hokah means string them up, right? String them up. So that's a pretty good directive. So I want to go back for a second and read Pasuk Dalet again. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, kach et kol roshei ha'am, v'hukah otam la'Hashem neged ha'shamesh. String them up, have the bodies hanging, in the sun. Which, by the way, the implication then would be until the sun sets. Have them string, which actually would come in line with the law. And as the sun sets, then you take them down. And by the way, that's God's instruction. And then the plague will subside. Vayomer Moshe el Shoftei Yisrael. Moshe says, Hirgu ish anashav nitzbal pa'ar. Kill them. But by the way, you notice now how Moshe is actually being a little bit more gentle.
but he's directing it in the wrong direction.
Perhaps. But what we see over here is that God says, string them up. And Moshe says, kill them. But again, you could, of course, tell me that there's not all that big of a difference between the two. I'm just pointing out that this is all very clear. Yeah.
Rashi seems to suggest that God's command is referring to the Avodah Zarah.
100%. The way that it's being led over here is that the sin that is being responded to by this outrage is, at least the way that Rashi is reading here, is absolutely the idolatry which may or may not have resulted from the seduction. Okay, and that seems to be what he is certainly focusing on, idolatry, which when you start to think about it, that's very, why? I mean, that's really the question, why? Yeah.
It could be that the seduction is part of the idolatry.
Sure.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. No, but
to that in that period of time. They had what was called the temple virgins, which were never virgins, but the <people were. laughs>
Okay, thank you for that.
I
know you're serious. Okay, let's... Correct. It was certainly a part. In biblical Hebrew, there is a difference between the word zonah versus the word kadesha. And a kadesha would be somebody whose sexuality is used within idolatrous services. If you in the missing chapter 38 in Bereshit, it says that Yehuda thought she was a zonah. And it says that Adulamite, right, when he talks to her, he says, you know, was there a Kadesha around here? So it actually switches from Yehuda's perception to the Adulamite's perception. The Adulamite is actually being Dan Lekaf Schud. He thinks, okay, at least there is a religious thing going on over here. And while Yehuda sees her as a Zonah, Yibayach Shevel is Zonah. So if you're careful about the word Zonah and Kadesha and look at the missing chapter 38, you'll notice something interesting there.
Because it says he wasn't going.
What?
Because he wasn't going.
No, he was just going for the hooker. Yeah, okay, so.
Also, Rashi, I gave a class recently on this, that it's the opposite. When you're talking about the Ten Commandments, right? A cross, you look at it, a cross, you're the one who.
Yes. Yes.
So, it's on one side it's idolatry, and then you go straight across. The other side is adultery. It's
correct.
The same sin.
Correct.
Right?
100%.
Well, it's not the same.
No. What you're referring to? What he said? It's not the same. That was the Rishalmi that says that anybody who eats
No.
Anybody who eats matzah on Erev Pesach is as if they had. The Rishalmi says this as if they had relations with their fiance in their father-in-law's house. So it's not Jackie Mason. It's long before Jackie Mason. It was already here. One of the leaders of the Haskalah said, the Gemara is wrong. I tried them both and there's no comparison. Okay. which Haskalah writer was it? Yeah, long before. Anyway. No. Mendelssohn was a religious man. No, don't go. You could blame it. No, what? They told you it was Mendelssohn. It wasn't Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn actually was Moses Mendelssohn was incredibly smart. There was a blind test or essay contest in terms of who can write the best essay in philosophy, and Kant came in second, Mendelssohn came in first. And this is a true story. Yeah, he was incredibly brilliant, but he was very, very disfigured. He was not a very good-looking man. He had a long nose. He was bald. He was a hunchback, but he was considered to be the greatest intellect in Europe. But he couldn't get married because he was very deformed. And you know, there were certain people who wanted to have him as a son-in-law. He came to this very wealthy man's house. He walked in. The daughter looked at him, screamed, and fainted. And absolutely not, absolutely not. So he said to the father-in-law, if you give me 30 seconds in a room with her alone, and if she doesn't want to marry me, I'll leave. So he goes into the room. He says, listen, a long time ago, there were two souls. And one of them was a male soul, one was a female soul. The female soul was destined to be born with a hunchback, with a long nose, and she was going to be so terribly ugly. And the male soul felt bad for her and said to God, please give me all of her deformities. And he says, that's why you're so beautiful. And she believed him. That's how Mendelssohn got married. Anyway, so you see, yeah. Anyway, be careful if anyone you want to use this at home, but it's so now you know he was smart. All right? Anything else he beat Kant, none of you were impressed that he got this girl to marry him. That was something. Okay. So let's go back over here. We're in the middle of the Gemara. The Gemara tells us that the tribe of Shimon, right? Back in source 10. Vayom Moshe El Shiftei Yisrael. Halach Shifto Shel Shimon Eitzel Zimri Ben Salu. So now, one of the leaders of Shimon, the tribe of Shimon, comes to Zimri, and they say, Amr lo, Hein Danin Dinin Nefashot. They're sitting, and there's a judicial process going on, and they're judging cases of life and death. Vatayo Sheva Shotek, and you're sitting here being quiet, you're not doing anything. Now, this is a very interesting introduction to the whole story. Me'asa, what did he do? Amad v'kibet 24,000 mi'Yisrael. So at the very end, we're going to find out 24,000 die, which is interesting because the 24,000 die, as far as we understood it, die because of the plague, which has already started. So now the 24,000 are first being introduced into the story at this juncture. V'alachik itzel Kozbi. He goes next to Kozbi. Amarla, he says, Hishmili. Hishmili doesn't mean listen to me. It means much more than that. It really means succumb to me. Omrlo bat melachani. She goes, no. By the way, what was she doing there? She's I'm the daughter of the king. V'chein tzivoli av avi, my father commanded me, lo tishmei, do not listen to, el lagadol shebem, to the greatest of them. Omarla av hu nasi sheva to, referring to himself, but he meaning about himself, he is the head of the sheva, the lo'od, el shu gadol mimenu, that he's even better than Moshe, shu sheni lebeten, v'hu shlishi lebeten. I'm the second son, and Moshe is the third in his family. Tafsa bibularita, which again, if the pickup line doesn't work, you can always try this. He grabs her by the hair. Tafsa bibularita, viyavia etsa Moshe, and he goes in front of Moshe. Amarlo, he says, Ben Amram, which, by the way, does not sound to be of the most dignified and way of addressing him. Zu asura o muteret. Is this woman allowed or not? We're not allowed or allowed. The imtoma asura, and if you're going to say that she's not allowed, bat yitro mi hitira lecha, who allowed you to marry another Midianite, the daughter of Yitro? By the way, what's really the answer right now? It's before Matan Torah. Presumably she stood at Har Sinai, which we can argue about. Presumably she stood at Har Sinai. Just like everybody else, she became Jewish at that particular moment. So therefore he didn't marry Midianite. So I'm just saying one could say that. By the way, on top of everything else, Moshe after Matan Torah separated from her. So Moshe has even been with it. So I'm saying there's all kinds of things to say, but what the Gemara actually then says, Nit alma mimenu halacha. Moshe forgot the law. Now this is very interesting because a number of commentaries are going to read this back into the text, and the only question is, does it actually say this in the text? Moshe forgot. Go kulam bivchia, and everybody started to cry. Now, who cried and why did they cry? So the Gemara doesn't tell us who cried, but what's the what does it sound like is the reason they're crying? What does the Gemara seem to indicate? They're crying because Moshe forgot. So now, again, so we just now read in Moshe's forgetting in order to explain why the crying is taking place. V'hainu dichtiv, and that's what it means when it says v'heim abochim petach o'a moed, and that's what it means. It says they were crying by the entrance to the o'a moed. V'ktiv, and it says, v'yar Pinchas ben Elazar, he sees Mara'ah. What did he see? Amarav Ra'am Ma'aseh, he sees what was going on, v'nizkar halacha, and he remembers this halacha. So the same halacha that Moshe now presumably forgets, Pinchas presumably remembers, Amar lo, achi avi abba, right, my father, basically my uncle, lo kachli maratani, didn't you teach us this, beriditcha mehar Sinai, when you came down from Har Sinai. By the way, if I stop right there, there's a lot of interesting things that Moshe taught when he came down from Har Sinai. But what does he say? He says, haboel etanachrit, a man who has relations with a non-Jewish woman, kina'in poginbo. A kanai, somebody who is a zealot, is allowed to take immediate action against it. Omar lo, karina de igrita, iu lahavi pervunaka. The person who reads the letter, he's the one who can then go and implement. Basically, you're the one who remembered, so you go and do it. For Shmuel Amar, that was Rav and now Shmuel, ra'asha'in, what did he see? Ra'asha'in chachma. He saw, basically, so that no one knows what's going on. He sees that there's a chilul Hashem taking place. No one knows what's going on. And when there's a chilul Hashem, you don't give honor to the rabbi. This is a very important law. It's good that you know this. He says that when there's a chilul Hashem, then you go ahead and act. And, you know, what do they say? Let the chips. Where they may. So that's the way the Gemara ends up. But again, it's important to note that there's two different conclusions, one Rav and Shmuel. Charlotte?
Wasn't Pinchas' mother a sister of Zipporah? Wasn't she also one of
Yisro? So Rashi brings that as well next week, but that's for next week's class, which we're not having. But it's the beginning, Rashi mentions that at the beginning of next week.
Yeah, just because you said, well, he's saying, you know, you married...
someone in the room, Pinchas being the one to...
So now you're pointing out that Pinchas may have something also...
That it was a person, yeah.
He may also have something invested in this, correct?
Yes.
Correct, excellent. In source number 11, there's a Midrash Agadah. It says, Amr la Moshe, zot muteret o asura? Amr Moshe asura. By the way, here Moshe responds, right? In the Gemara, Moshe was silent. Over here, Moshe, she allowed or not allowed? What does Moshe say? Asura, mene shehi midyanit. Amr lo zimri, heich tamar devar kazeh, vota shehi imcha b'chavuretcha. Eina midyanit, aren't you married to a midyanit? Miyad nitrashlu yadav shel Moshe. Moshe became very weak at that moment. Hitchil Moshe ve'elazar v'hazakenim bochim. Over here, Moshe's crying. So that's very important. Why does it say Moshe and Elazar and the Zakenim were crying? Why all of them? Why does the Midrash say all of them? Because what did the Chumash say? Hema bochim. It was in plural. What did the Midrash want to say? Moshe is the one who's reduced to tears, but he couldn't only say Moshe because of the plural in the text. So therefore, it's saying that all of them are crying. Shenamar vehema bochim, as it says, and they were crying. Look at the Tanchuma in source 12. Nit alma mimenu halacha, the law escaped him, or Moshe forgot it. Go kulam bivchia, and everyone started to cry. So again, we have in these different versions of it basically the same story, but we're not exactly sure who's crying. We're not exactly sure why is the crying taking place. See, I would also say on a simple level, again, I'm saying very, very simple level shot, that if indeed Moshe is crying or any other people are crying, they're crying because of the chutzpah involved in this. I mean, right, let's go back to something very simple. Here you're approaching a leader and you're saying to him, basically, you're a hypocrite over here. But it's not just an isolated incident of somebody raising their hand in class and challenging Moshe. It's much more than that. It's the entire scene which is taking place. Within this entire scene, and Moshe trying to make sense of it, and Moshe trying to stop a plague which is taking place. Again, let's just keep in mind, the way that we read the text, and God's anger is burning. There's a plague which is taking place, and he's standing up now and trying to challenge Moshe. So that's a very good question. What is the his angle? Let's go back now to source number 2. Source number 2 is going on Pasuk Vav, which is the verse that has the crying. Vayakrev el Moshe. Sorry. Vayakrev el Echav et Midyanit. So he says, Lahaznota. In order, right, just in case we missed it, the Rashbam, by the way, who normally will tell us absolute pshat, he says that he brings her for in order to have relations with her. Kidichtiv lo tikrevu legalot erva. That we find the word likarev being used within the context of a sexual sin. So he brings her close for the purpose of having relations, which of course leads us to another question. And that is, what was it, the Gemara has him pulling her by the hair. I don't recall saying that in the Chumash itself. What did the Chumash say? B'nei Yishmi b'nei Yisrael bav v'yakrev el echav et hamidyanit. Le'nei Moshe v'nei kol adap b'nei Yisrael. V'hem ha'bochim petach ha'omoed. By the way, notice something. In this Pasuk Vav, there's no dialogue. There's no words being used. He's not challenging Moshe in the text itself by saying, is she allowed? Is she not allowed? So as, again, I'm just saying, pshat. So what is he doing? The Gemara, of course, puts dialogue in. There's no dialogue here. So what is he doing? But what is he doing in front of them? What is he doing? So when it says, V'yakrev elachav et hamidyanit, l'nei Moshe v'nilikot ben Yisrael, v'hein bochim petach ha'moed, v'yakrev lahaznota. What the Rashbam is saying, in case you don't understand it, he's implying that publicly in front of everybody, Zimri is engaged in a sexual act. I mean, I'm sure somebody would say to them, "No, go get a tent." Right? That's what you're saying. Get a room.
He did get a tent.
So that would depend on how you understand the kuba, which comes afterwards. So again, is it that he then grabs in front and says, "Well, I'm taking her into this tent," right? I mean, which means what is there's a public display of lust, right?
What was the point of him bringing the 24,000?
Well, again, the 24,000 are not here in the Chumash. The 24,000 die at the end of the story, so they're blaming it all on Zimri, which may or may not be fair. According to the Gemara, he brings all 24,000, and they're the ones who all end up dying. According to the simple reading of the text, the 24,000 are already dying. Although it is interesting, if you look at the previous census and the next census, Rashi points out, you'll notice that Rashi says most, but you can say all. Shimon has 24,000 less people than the previous census does, while all the other tribes, the fluctuation is very, very small. So they are missing 24,000. The argument that most, if not all, of the dead are from Shimon is a very strong one. The Gemara apparently understands that and knows that, and therefore is putting the blame on the leadership. But again, not on Moshe, is putting the blame on Zimri for doing this outrage. In the Gemara. In the Gemara when she's pulled by the hair, right? Over
and
here.
Refuses.
Well, according to the Gemara, she refuses because she wants to seduce Moshe. She was sent for Moshe. She says, I'm not here for people like you. I'm special. So that's also quite interesting. Look at the Chizkunian source number 3. So he also understands it the same way that we saw in the Rashbam. Now that's very interesting, the second part of the Chizkunian. What are the two parts? The first part, he says, is that he did bring her forth, again, to be involved in sexual action. Behavior, which brings me back to the question I raised in the beginning. What exactly is the relationship between these benot Moav coming liznot et ha'am versus the idolatry that takes place? Of course, understanding that there may be some kind of a strong relationship between the two. Over here, it says the reason that they were crying, according to the Chizkuni, is an editorial comment. Who's crying? Who's crying? So who's crying? The leaders are crying. Why? Because Moshe just now gave them an order. What was the order? Okay, God's words were string them up. What does Moshe say? Kill the people who are involved in this. And here, the according to the Hema Bochim, the Chizkuni, is that we have now hesitation. There's hesitation at the implementation of Moshe's decree, which is really a decree of God. Here is a strange comment of the Targum Yonatan. V'ka'asher shama, when Moshe heard what... Okay, let's... He reads the Gemara into it. Let me read the whole thing. V'nei ish mibnei Yisrael bava achaz bebula rita shel midyanit v'karav ota el echav l'mar'em Moshe l'mar'e kol ha'ida shel bnei Yisrael. Right, he brings her down, he drags her, and right, ana v'kach amar l'moshe mazot litkarev aleha, am I allowed to be with her? V'im omar artasha asurai, stated not allowed, he, halo ata lakachta te midyanit bat yitro, didn't you yourself marry a Midianite? U'kashesh shama Moshe, when Moshe hears this, ratach, he got angry, v'shochach, which by the way is a very Rambam approach, that the Rambam generally, a number of times, sees that Moshe's sin is one of getting angry, that going back to last week's parasha as well. Moshe gets angry, and therefore he forgets the halacha. There's also a parenthetical statement, ibed hakarato, that Moshe fainted. By the way, I read Rav Kook's response to the massacre in 1929. Right when Rav Kook was told about the massacre and boys are dead, Rav Kook's response was fainting on the spot. Just absolutely fainted. And then it was Shabbos, and when they revived him, then he went into action. But that was the response. He just absolutely fainted. Over here, we're told that at least in this parenthetical comment, that Moshe faints. He faints from what? I don't know what to say. The chutzpah, the hein bochim, and they were crying, the korim shma, and they were saying shma. Now, by the way, I assume it's not Zimri and Cosby. Could have been Kriyat Shma Lamita. I don't know. But I assume it's not talking about them. Rather, who is it talking about? It's talking about... But it's so interesting. So why is the Shema here? By the way, that's something for you to think about. Why the Shema? What? Good. So they're saying God is one. They're saying God is one. So there are, maybe it's even Rabbi Nachman who says that, but a lot of the Hasidic sources focus, from the whole story, that's what they focus on the saying Shema, which comes out over here. Yeah. If you want real Hasidic Torah, which nobody said, you're allowed to make up Hasidic Torah, in Shema, there are 248 letters, which are the same number as Ramach. So over here, he takes, which is spelled the same way, which is 248. So you can do anything that you want with that as well. Also the same letters as Ramach is also, if you put the order around differently, it's Rechem, which is how the sin takes place. And another way of putting the same letters, yes, am I wrong, is Machar, is tomorrow. Which Machar is always something which we find, we've said this before, in terms of the battle with Amalek, is always responding by pushing things off to tomorrow, while Amalek always seems to want things immediately. So I'm just mentioning all that to you. When Shalosh Shudas comes, you can do anything you want with that. Let's go back to source number 5 and look at Rashi. Rashi just takes the Gemara, reads it right into the text. Behema bochim, why? Nitamo mimena halacha, kolabol aramit, kanayim pokim, bogo kolam, b'chia. Right, see, Rashi is the one who is guilty, I'm saying this carefully, Rashi is the one who's guilty of getting us to think that what the Gemara says is what the Chumash says. Right, as Rashi is wont to do. Over here, the Chumash didn't say anything about Moshe forgetting anything, it didn't say anything about not knowing the law, it didn't even say about anything about Zimri speaking. Zimri does an outrage, and Rashi reads that right into the text. So therefore, and therefore, Moshe forgets, and therefore Pinchas remembers. Moshe shows, as my father said, a lack of leadership at this point. Moshe's leadership, if he no longer knows what to say in such a situation, one can already question. By the way, look at the continuation of Rashi, because he says everyone starts to cry. This is also taken from the Gemara. Be'egel amad Moshe keneged shishim ribo. By the Egel, Moshe did stand up in front of everybody, 600,000, Shenemar, Vayitchan at Sherdak, Vekan Rafu Yadav, Elekidei, Shivo Pinchas Vitol Etera Uilo. That all of this, according to Rashi, saying, is in order for Pinchas to be rewarded. By the way, there's a big argument. Was Pinchas actually a Kohen before this or not? It's a little strange, but it's almost like the joke. Pinchas wants to be a Kohen. Why? Well, his father was a Kohen, his grandfather was a Kohen, so why shouldn't Pinchas be a Kohen? So there is this whole thing that only the sons became Kohen and children and grandchildren born afterwards. Pinchas was already born. So you have this whole discussion. It's very difficult, that whole discussion. And it's actually in the Gemara there is an argument where the Pinchas was already a Kohen. By the way, it should be the opposite. Theoretically, a Kohen who murders should lose the ability to be a Kohen. So over here, it could be he was a Kohen. He loses his kahuna by being involved in spilling blood, and then God gives it back to him in next week's Pasha. But it's not that he never was a Kohen before, but I said that itself is interesting. But that's really where Rashi seems to be bringing us towards. Not that Moshe is inadequate as a leader, but Moshe had to make space in order to create a whole narrative that Pinchas can receive the reward that's coming to him. Yeah.
Because of his anava, he makes his decisions, but he doesn't defend himself when he's attacked. And the same thing that he's doing here. I mean, he took Zipporah, not necessarily he had his reasons for doing it. It wasn't the wrong thing to do.
Okay, so let's continue.
He never defends himself when he is personally attacking. There are other places
okay.
where he's
okay. But I want to go back for a second to where Rashi just took us, because Rashi took us to the Chayta Egel, and the truth is, there is a very, very strong parallel between these two episodes. On one very, very basic level, both of them include idolatry. On another basic level, maybe slightly under the text, maybe right there, in both of them, there's also a perceived sexual outrage as well. And in both cases as well, there is also the spilling of blood. Over here, it's black and white in terms of being ordered and then ultimately in terms of what Pinchas does. Over there, it's more on the midrashic level initially in terms of the death of Hur, who tries to stop them, and then later on in terms of Moshe calling out to Shevet Levi and saying, okay, you know, whoever's with me, come. So what you have in both of these cases is Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayot, and Shfichut Damim, which basically is as good as it gets when we're talking about Jewish outrage. So the parallel between the two is very strong, but what Rashi's saying over here, we'll notice there that Moshe is quite heroic in that sense, and maybe even what we should do is that we should take a look and to see the narrative over there, and to see exactly what it says and maybe what it doesn't say. Look at source 24. Vayishma Yeshua kol ha'am b're'o vayomer el Moshe kol milchama b'machaneh. So we discussed this a little while ago. There was this cacophony, there was this noise taking place, there was confusion, what the noise is. And by the way, the sound in the camp, you know, basically you have an outrage over here. You have this orgy, this music, this dancing, this, and probably other people who were upset. You probably have this whole scene, which may not sound all that different from the scene which is taking place right over here. And by the way, and I'm including in this the Hein Bochim. You have a whole bunch of people celebrating, and you have a whole bunch of people who are crying. So over here, this confusion of sounds also may be a very appropriate introduction to it. Pasuk Yudtet, Vayihi Kasher Karav, by the way, you notice the same word, Karav. By the way, here it says Moshe got angry. In the other case, it doesn't say Moshe got angry. We hear something much. We hear God gets angry. God's anger over here was already expressed prior when Moshe was still up. Moshe says, "Who's with me?" And by the way, here there's no divine instruction. Moshe is the one who leads and says, "Who's with me?" But Yomalem Koamar Hashem, but he quotes God, Elokei Yisrael, Simu Ish Chabo Al Yerecho, Ivru V'Shavu Mishar L'Shar B'Machaneh, V'Rgo Ishet Achiv, V'Ishet Reyo, V'Ishet Krovo. Go ahead and a cleanup mission. Go kill anybody who was involved in this. V'Yasu B'nei Levi Kedur, Mashiv Yipom Min Am B'Yomahu, Kishloshet Alafei Ish, which means there 3,000 died, which means we've improved now. We've gone from 3,000 to 24. V'Yom Moshe Ma'lu Yedchem Hayom L'Hashem, Ki Ish Bivno uva achiv ulateit aleim hayom bracha. So over here, we're hearing is that there Moshe very strongly leads, and Moshe says, and although, and I have to ask, as much as Moshe is being accused of forgetting and not going, know what's going on, and fainting and crying and all that, hold it a second. Moshe gave the same instruction over here, right? God says, "Go ahead, string them up," and Moshe goes, "Go ahead and kill them," which means all that I'm asking right now is, you know, as much as we are lulled into thinking that Moshe has totally, Moshe is no longer a leader, no longer is no functioning, and is this really justified by the reading of the text over here? Is it really what's telling us? And that's something which I think is a little bit disturbing. Yes,
it's also second generation. I mean, when you think about it, it's like deja vu for Moshe, because this is a completely different group. This is their children acting the same way as their fathers.
Rabbi Soloveitchik said that that's why Moshe's crying. Moshe's crying is because this is a new generation who he's raised, which means the first generation are the people who left Egypt. this is the generation that he's raised, he's educated, he's taught, which means this is his failure. So the feeling of failure is why Moshe cries. Of course, I am still raising the question, who in fact is crying? Abba, you want to just...
No, I wanted to say that. I forgot it was about...
Yeah. Charlotte?
Okay. If you want to go back further and have another parallel, we can look at Shem. We can look at Shimon and Levi, who got their initiation into killings back then.
Right.
We can look at sexual crime. We can look at what was the motivation of this to bring these people as part of us.
Correct.
Having a brit milah and so on. So we can go back to the original scene there. It's not...
Right. The Shechem discussion is a very strong parallel. I taught this once. I wrote about this. What?
The impotence of
Yaakov. Of Yaakov. The Ishbitzer is the one who makes the most absurd statement in the history of Jewish writings. He's a Hasidic leader, and he says that ultimately Pinchas was right, that Zimri was right, and Pinchas was wrong. Zimri was right what he was doing. Anybody want to see this? The Ishbitzer says this. I don't know how you could possibly have... Is it in my book? Read my book. I don't know how anybody can possibly say something which is more obscene than that, but the Ishbitzer says it. If you're a Hasidic rabbi, you can say anything. Okay. Let me...
That's a response to what I said.
He connects the two scenes. He basically says is that there's some holy neshamot that want to come and join the Jewish people. And look at the terrible things that we do. We try to chase away these neshamot. And basically, I guess Zimri was doing Kiruv, if that's what you call it.
Yeah. That's what the pasuk
says. Yeah. Okay. But I'm saying he says this, that Pinchas was a nar. Pinchas was a child. He wasn't deep. He didn't understand. Zimri was a leader. He understood what he was doing. Was theologically far more advanced. Okay, may I speak?
What does he make of God's reaction?
I'll tell you something interesting about that, yeah.
What does he make of God's reaction?
Who? The Ishbitzer? The Ishbitzer says that God was rewarding Pinchas. I should go on this. It's far, far more interesting. That God was rewarding Pinchas because he had good motivations, even though he was wrong. Anything else you want to know about this?
Didn't Moshe also forget the laws of Tzedakah?
There are various cases where it says that it's implied that Moshe forgot. It never says Moshe forget. Moshe turns to God and asks them. I think every time Moshe does, it's because of a personal issue that Moshe has some kind of personal issue involved, and therefore he wants the answer to come from God and not to look like it comes from him. I think if you check through the various cases, one could indicate this. Okay. Take a look at source 18. Source 18 is right after the Cheta Egel, after Moshe goes up and Moshe gets the second luchot, right? Vayomar Shem Moshe psolcha shnei luchot avanim kirishonim katavti luchot tadvirim asher ayu al luchot rishonim asher shibarta. Right? Vayered Hashem banan. Here you have the forgiveness taking place. Hashem Hashem kerachem luchanun and so on. And then we have instructions. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Shemor lecha et asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. So it's very interesting in context. What is it, meaning? What does God say next? Okay, I forgive you. New luchot. Now pay attention. Be very careful not to make a covenant with those people who are in the land, because they will end up being a stumbling block for you. He es mizbochotam titatzun. Basically destroy all of their places of worship. You should not worship another god. Here it uses the word znut in context of avodah zarah. V'kara lecha v'achalta mizibcho, v'lakachta mibnotav levanecha, v'zanu bnotav acharei Elohim, v'hiznu et banecha acharei Eloheim. Which is absolutely a response to the Chet HaEgel, but what's really interesting here is the way that it interchanges between the term normally used for sexual sins, nut, together with idolatry. What Jerry said before is absolutely correct in terms of the luchot, of reading them across, of reading not to have other gods and not to commit adultery. Over here as well, we just see these two sections coming very, very clearly in front of us. We're getting towards the end, so I want to read one or two more things and then make a suggestion. Source 14 was where Rashi said, string them up. That's how we explained Vuhukah. In the Targum Yonatan, in Source 15, it says, Ve'yomash l'dayanei Yisrael, right, because there it said Shoftei, Hirgu ish ish shivto. What was the text itself said? It didn't say shivto in the Chumash. Rather, what did it say? Hirgu ish anashav. So the question is, what does anashav mean? So I think it's as good of a suggestion as any. Anashav means that each tribe will adjudicate on their people on their tribe. Anashav. Rashi, look at Rashi in Source 16. Hirgu ish anashav kol echad midanei Yisrael hayahorag shnayim. Midanei Yisrael shmona. Shmona ribo, v'shmona talafim, k'di'ita v'tzenedrin. Rashi has worked out exactly who kills who, but the suggestion of the Targum that each tribe deals with their own makes a great deal of sense. Ibn Ezra, hagu ish anashav, atami eza shevet yiyu. Right? Again, it goes back to tribes. Which basically, let's just try to rework what the Chumash actually told us. We have the girls of Midian coming and somehow seducing, either sexually or religiously, the men. We then have God's anger, and then we're told, and they serve Pa'or. We have God's anger come out, and he says to Moshe, you know, go and string them up. Moshe then turns to the leaders and says, each one deal with your people and kill them. Then what happens next? Then the leader of one of the tribes says, I'm not going to do this to my tribe. Right? And by the way, that you did hear from the Gemara. From the Gemara, it comes from the tribe, aren't you going to stop and whatever? But now you have one tribe where the leader is saying no. And instead of following Moshe's directive, which is to kill the people, what does he do instead?
He says, I'm
going to
do it also.
Instead of joining Moshe and trying to stop the plague, what he does is that he joins the sinners, going back to the first stage of the sin, perhaps, going back, you know, in terms of the sexual sin leading on to the idolatry. He goes right into this. Now, here's where things get complicated. Zimri. Here's where things get complicated. And what it comes down to, is this ultimately one sin or two different sins? Is this ultimately, even in terms of God, the anger of God, is this only because of Pa'or? Or did, by the way, did the worship of Pa'or somehow involve the sexual sin as well? The Gemara says something which is not supported by any kind of outside knowledge. When I say that, but the Gemara says that the way that Pa'or was worshipped was by defecating it. And you always have to be careful on Gemaras like that. Is the Gemara telling you exactly what they really did, or is the Gemara expressing a disgust? But what you do see within the worship of Pa'or, if the Gemara is really not just being involved in a polemic, then the Gemara is saying is that there was some kind of an acknowledgement that whatever is natural is therefore necessarily good. If that's the case, then the line from the Gemara's understanding of the defecation in front of the idol as worship to essentially public relations or free sex, as it were, basically you there have the 60s. This is what you have. You have everything which is natural is good, which is one of the biggest idolatries which exists today. There are many things which are natural which are very bad for you, right? Just because food says 100% natural does not mean that it's good for you. So over here, they were worshipping nature, worshipping what's natural, and therefore Zimri seems to be brought into this as well. But again, I'm saying is that I think that one of the most important questions in this whole narrative, are there two separate sins, or is there one sin? Is the sexual part independent of the idolatry, or is it part of the idolatry? God's anger over here, is it for Pa'or? Is it therefore only because they worship the idol, but the sex, okay, that was understandable? Or is that the sex was part of the worship of Pa'or, and therefore when God's expresses his anger and disdain towards Paul, or is it both episodes? Over here, when Zimri is going and taking this woman, is this part of the worship of Pa'or, or is this something which is independent of the worship of Pa'or? Which leads us, therefore, God tells Moshe what to do. Moshe tells the people what to do. There's no forgetting anything. Till we get over here, this intrigue in terms of the whole dialogue, which is not in the Chumash. Again, think about all the stuff which isn't in the Chumash, which we're almost convinced it's there. That he comes and he pulls her by the hair and he says, well, hold it, she's a Midianite, you married a Midianite. So that's not here. None of that is here. Rather, what's here, Moshe says to each tribe, go and do something about it. And now we have one tribe which is rebelling. And the tribe is saying, no, we're not going to rebel. And I'm saying, now, if I have then put forth the argument that the sexual sin is part of the sin of Pa'or, so what we have over here is more of a judicial breakdown than anything else. Zimri, and therefore the tribe of Shimon, are not willing to implement what God said, and they're not willing to implement what Moshe says. We don't have Moshe forgetting any law, but rather we have now a breakdown in terms of the implementation of Moshe's decree. At that point, okay, the crying, which now becomes a key point. So who's crying? Is it Moshe's crying because of his own perceived failures? Is it, again, as the Targum tells us, Moshe faints, or is it Moshe... Or is the crying taking place by the people? Again, you will find among the commentaries, any people who you want to say, any combination, you'll find somebody who says that they were the ones who were crying. Because it says, hey, Mabochim. To say it's Moshe is actually a little hard, because how do you refer to Moshe as the Hema? Who's the Hema? So it sounds like that there are people crying. It could very well be the judges. The judges are crying because the other judge over here, Zimri, is not doing what he should do. So there, what does Pinchas do? Pinchas stands up and he, well, actually, it's very interesting what he does. He does exactly what Moshe said to do when, not here. He does what Moshe said to do when? By the eagle. What did Moshe say by the eagle? B'nei Levi, right? Take up your swords. Which means over here, God's instruction was to string them up. Moshe says to kill them. Pinchas over here sees this, basically sees the judicial breakdown, and therefore he gets involved over here, and we go back to the words of Shmuel, he sees a Chilul Hashem taking place. When there's a Chilul Hashem taking place, there's no time now to start asking a judicial process or whatever. He says, I'm going to do something to stop the Chilul Hashem taking place. He gets involved and he does what he does. And that seems to be the larger understanding. It's possible to read this into the words of the Ramban. We'll look at source 26, and you'll decide if the Ramban says this or not. If he does say it, good. If he doesn't say it, also good. Aval pirish ish anashav sheyegu ha-shoftim kol ha-nitzmadim kol beitin u-beitin yadun et shifto ve-et alufo. Each court will then judge their particular people. Kidichtiv ve-kachet roshei shifteichem ve-atenotam rosham aleichem sarei lafim sareinot, and so on. V'nachon be'enai be'inyan ha-parsha, the Ramban says what seems to me in this parsha, ki mitchila ne'emar v'yitzmod Yisrael bal pa'or v'yichaf af Hashem b'Yisrael, that God gets upset. Ki yatzah ha-ketzef milifnei Hashem. Again, as soon as God gets upset, the anger comes out, which means the plague begins. Hachal ha-negeth, the plague started. V'Hashem b'rachamav amar l'Moshe, and God therefore, with compassion, says to Moshe, why would you say with compassion? What? It's also Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's also Yud Kei Vav Kei. The Ramban, that didn't slip by the Ramban. You notice that in Pasuk Dav, Yomar Hashem Moshe. It's Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's not Elokin. If it was Midat Hadin, do you understand what the Ramban is saying here? Uh-huh. If it were Midat Hadin, it would have said, take that out and kill them all. No. This is a way to stop the plague. Which, by the way, the way to stop a plague is actually to heal the relationship between God and the Jewish people, which is what a Kohen does. Which means by Pinchas killing over here, he's doing the job of a Kohen. Okay? It's very important to notice that. But again, I'm going to say, whether the Ramban said this or not, I'm not positive, but let's go back to the Ramban. The Negev started. V'Hashem b'rachamav amar l'Moshe she'ishpetu ha-shoftim ve'ilu ha-nitzmadim ve'lo yisva ha'af tzadik im rasha. In order that not Because once a plague goes on, innocent die together with the guilty. Moshe tziva kein l'shoftim, and Moshe told the shoftim to implement it. V'kasher ne'esfu kol eda petach ha'omoed la'asot kedvar Moshe ve'od ha'negev hava b'hem. And as Moshe gathers them, the plague is still striking people down. V'ne'az hashim oni hazeh, right? This brazen member of the Shimon tribe. V'karev etach elachav etamidyanit limrod b'Moshe uv'shoftim lasod kein b'farhesya. He is rebelling against the judicial process and against Moshe, and to do this publicly, ki nasiva gadol haya v'rabim ozrim lo, and he had many people supporting him. O k'moshe m'rabotenu sh'amr lo shifto anu nedunim. Now he quotes the Gemara, v'atah shotek v'ne hitchil Moshe v'shoftim lefchot, and therefore Moshe and the judges start to cry. V'yamot Pinchas v'yifalel. What does vayifalel mean? It can either be he prays from the word of tefillah, or he judges. And there is a relationship between those words. V'lo nidan echad mikol ha'am b'yad ha'shoftim, ki Hashem amar v'hu kah otam v'yashuv charon af Hashem Yisrael, v'kwashav apo u'lakach lo hizkir katu v'yisru kein shoftei Yisrael. So over here, again, if the Ramban said exactly how I said it, I'm not sure. I think you could read some of it into it. But as I said, the key from what I see is the sexual behavior and the idolatry, two separate things. And it's interesting that after the Chet HaEgel, the two of them really are brought together within one statement by God in terms of the interaction between the two. And as you pointed out before, that's something which the Gemara tells us, that there always was for the Jews this great tradition of some kind of an interaction between sexual misbehavior and idolatry. And the Gemara goes so far as to say that Jews never believed in idolatry, but it was a good way to pick up chicks. That's what the Gemara says. So it says that over here, when you see that, you know, the girls are saying, okay, that's all I got to do, bow down to this, and that's it. Fine, I'll bow down to this, worship this, do this, which means okay, and maybe that's a part of this as well. But as I said, unless one realizes the possibility that the sexual sin is part of the worship of Pa'or, and that would make Zimri's whole behavior that much worse. And Pinchas's response, absolutely understandable, basically intimating what Moshe said, although, as I said, not necessarily what he said here, but what he said already back by the Eagle, by, you know, take your sword, you know, shave it, Levi, and go get involved and do the cleanup work. Okay.